the Mississippi Crop Situation Podcast.
Hey guys, welcome back to the second episode today we're doing of the Mississippi Crop Situation Podcast with the Entomology Dream Team. I've got to go look at some sick rice in Itabena, so I'm going to step out, turn the controls over to Whitney, and let's try to start some new talent on the podcast.
That's the real talent.
None of us know how to work that equalizer on that computer except for Whitney, so she's got to run the show today. But I guess I think on this one, what we're going to talk about is just the general soybean insect update. We got a lot of things starting to pick up now, and I figure we'll hit some general stuff on soybeans, from boll worms to stink bugs to loopers to even green clover worm.
Sounds good, brother.
So what are you hearing, Don? What are you seeing?
I'm hearing, as far as boll worms, you know, anywhere from a few to a good many. I've heard, you know, two or three per 25 sweeps, all the way up to 15. I got folks treating them with everything, you know, from NPVs to diamides. And it's like what you would expect. It's very highly variable, depends on where you're at, stage of beans, location.
Yeah, and I've talked to quite a few people, exactly what you said. We got people running those 3-4 counts, and we got some people well above threshold, just depending on where you are. And one of the odd things that's always an odd thing, and I've never quite figured out why, is where you can have two fields at R2, open canopies, look great. One's full of them, one has none.
Well, I think that goes back to, and I'm going to date myself, running maw traps 20 years ago in Louisiana. You'd have one trap on one side of the field fill up, the other trap on the other side of the field have three.
Yep.
I think the local geography and landscape funnels those moths in ways that we don't understand.
Yeah, there's no question. You look at like Gus's stuff up there on Bayou Bartholomew.
Oh, that's just flyway.
The way he gets moths up there is just unbelievable.
Yeah, I mean, I've noticed that based on what I've heard, they're just really, really spotty this year. Bad in one field and not too bad in another. I think Don nailed it. We just don't understand as much as we think we do about a lot of these insects that we deal with.
Yeah,
especially when it comes to movement, you know, within either localized geographies or across bigger geographies.
So with spotty locations, how do you move forward in making control recommendations or best management practices?
Well, I mean, the biggest thing that it tells you is that you have to scout every field.
That's right.
Absolutely.
You can't scout one or two fields and base sprays on that.
I'm going to dispel a myth that I've heard for years and years, and people listening to this go, oh, that ain't true, but we've all run this ghost down. Purple flowers versus white flowers. You know what? They like them both the same. It's just a matter. It's just a matter of whether they're going to be in that field or not in that field.
It's just that does everything line up as far as moths being there,
that's right,
being at the right growth stage, whether or not how many predators are out there.
Yeah, but I am hearing a lot more, and I made a prediction last week. I had one of those moments where it just hit me, and I told Whitney about it. And she said something about it, I think, maybe in the blog that she did or something. But I was just thinking about it because, you know, we were getting a lot of calls about worms and cotton last week. You know, everybody's looking at cotton visually in the terminal. So you can find those eighth-inch worms.
Oh, yeah.
And we wasn't getting that many calls at least last week, but they really started this week in beans. And I told her, I said, well, you know why? I said, it seemed like beans always are a week behind cotton, at least a week behind. But if you think about how we're sampling beans with a sweep net, you can't find an eighth-inch worm hardly in the bottom of a dang sweep net, especially if it's wet or anything. So you don't really see them. And they're probably there. You just don't see them until about a week later when they get enough size you can pick them out of a sweep
net. Yeah, you'll see one or two here and there, but not consistently.
Look, I had a guy yesterday. This just amazed me. I would have never even thought of this. And y'all, this is just crazy. This just goes to show how hard some people look. He was digging through the blooms in the bottom of his sweep net and digging two-day-old worms that were inside the dried blooms. And I said, dude, that's amazing. I said, I've never even thought about doing that. One, I probably couldn't see them anyway if I was digging a small one. But, I mean, he was finding them. He was in there. He was finding them.
I'm with you. I mean, I got a special pair of glasses I use to check for worms, and I'm not sure they're stout enough to look for them.
I don't have the patience for that.
I don't either, but some of these consultants, man, they're more thorough than our thresholds.
I mean, that's their prerogative, but I've seen 7, 8, 9, 10 per 25, you know, second, third instar infestations between Friday and Monday vanish.
Yeah, that happens, no doubt.
Yeah, and that's important from the standpoint of if you scout too good and find too many of those really small larvae, you'd end up spraying a population you may not need to spray.
Yeah, so let's talk about that half-inch thing. That's something we always forget about. The half-inch, you know, our threshold, if just say it's 9 per 25 sweeps, you know, at certain price beans or whatever. But the stipulation has always been in there half-inch in size. Why do we got that in there? Somebody explain that, why that's so important as far as what a larvae eats based on their size, and if you got time for another check.
Well, I mean, the smaller they are, the less they eat.
Yeah,
is basically, you know, the last 2/4 and 1/5, 1/6 instar eat more than all of the others put together. Plus, the smaller ones have higher mortality.
That's
from
right.
You know, predators or getting hung up in the trichomes, or
I'd guess that probably came from some old guy like us that couldn't see them any smaller than a half inch.
It may be. Well,
that very well could be true too.
And it may be. Now, I have seen 2-3 day-old worms drilling in a pod, but I mean, I've seen it before. And but for the most part, the old adage is the last 2 or 3 to 4 days of that larvae's life, they eat 90% of the food they eat as a larvae in their whole lifetime.
Yep.
So you have some time to
Absolutely.
React. You don't have to go crazy and spray little small worms.
Well,
and I really think where a lot of that came from is there are a lot of beneficial insects in a soybean field, and if you hadn't done anything up to that point to disrupt them, they can take care of those small larvae, and I think that's where a lot of them disappear. They get eaten by other things that are out there.
And I do think all of our consultants really understand that, because they don't want to spray. I mean, they're trying to hold off as long as they
can. All of our background is, you know, through schools, all in cotton, mine included. And you have a mindset when you work in cotton. And it's not the same mindset when you get into beans. And we did a big project a couple of years ago looking at where larvae feed in beans. They feed on a whole lot more leaves than I ever thought they did in beans.
And I think that explains why we get a lot better control with certain insecticides in beans versus cotton, because they're consuming foliage with AI on it.
That's true.
Yep, absolutely.
Get a lot higher dose in soybeans.
Yep, that's exactly
right. We kind of see the same thing in peanuts, that there's a lot of things that'll control bollworms in peanuts that won't control them in other things. Things like Intrepid, Diamond, we don't think of those as bollworm products.
Mm-hmm.
But it's the fact that in peanuts, the only thing they're eating is leaves.
Yeah.
So they're getting an extremely high dose of it.
Well, let's hit on just some quickly a few control options for bollworms, because we got several pests to mention. And I got one that was never really that much of a pest, but Lord, I've had a lot of calls about it. I want to mention it this year, green clover worms, in a little bit. But let's talk just a little bit about control options, Whitney, in soybeans for bollworms, and then we'll move on.
So, in soybeans, right?
In soybeans.
So, your options, you can so obviously the diamides, Prevothon, Besiege, but in soybeans, you can utilize the Intrepid Edge.
And what about if you're running them real low numbers of smaller worms?
So, that would be a good place to utilize Helogen, which is one of the biologicals when you're running those smaller numbers. Just remember, though, with Helogen, the worm size, the smaller is better.
The other thing with the diamides is you don't have to have as high of a rate in soybeans as you do in cotton or Intrepid Edge. I mean, all those things work better in beans than they do in cotton.
Yeah.
I think this is a good time to note that what Jeff was saying, there's other compounds you can use because they're feeding more foliage or eating more foliage in soybeans and peanuts, that we can utilize those other products that are not diamides, especially when we have issues in cotton.
Well, I mean, we say we have a lot of products. Really, we've got three. We've got two products with the same diamide. We've got Intrepid Edge, and we got the NPV Helogen. And that's really what we have in beans because, you know, there's hardly any steward this move because of price.
Yeah.
And then lanates hit or miss, and then pyrethroids are hit or miss. So
I've got, you know, I saw, and it's been a year ago, but on that Southern Farming Facebook page, they were talking about, hey, what are you guys spraying bollworms and beans? Now, you got to remember, this is across a large geography. It's not specific to Mississippi. But I was really surprised at how many people still use pyrethroids for bollworm control. And they may get great control. You start moving out in other areas. But the reason, y'all, that we took that out of our control guide in the state of Mississippi, I'm not going to say you wouldn't get 50% control, but I have seen a zero, and I've seen a 90, and inconsistency has just been horrible because of resistance, and I am scared to death of inconsistent products.
You can have either, and I can't tell you which one you're going to get when you put it out.
That's exactly right. But that's the reason. I mean, it's based on resistance, and you might knock some down, but the guy that don't knock them down, well, it'll flare them, and they'll be way, way worse.
And Gus had some data like that in Arkansas a few years ago that – they went from threshold down to like 3 with a pyrethroid.
Mm-hmm.
Well, with their extended flights in 2 weeks, he went from 3 to 40.
Yeah.
We typically don't see that, but, you know, it seems like each year is getting weirder than the last one. So who knows? We may be moving toward that situation too.
So let's.
I think a good way to put that is the cost of spraying a pyrethroid when you needed a diamide is a lot higher than the cost of spraying a diamide when you could have gotten by with a pyrethroid.
I have to digest that for a while. I'm going to assume it makes sense.
I can see your eyes spinning.
Look, my brain runs a lot of rage. I got like a rat in my head running in a cage at all times.
Our deep thinker over here is done cut loose on us.
Look, I want to move off of that for a minute. I want to hit – I've had – and it's just really odd. I've had more calls about green clover worms this year, just people really noting the number. I mean, our threshold on green clover worms is like 38 per 25 sweeps. I mean, it's extremely high. But I've had a lot of people hitting it. Now, a lot of them aren't really even spraying. They're not getting a lot of damage from them. They can cause the 20% defoliation and so forth. But for whatever year, we're having a big green clover worm year. And it's not something I'm extremely concerned about. I mean, if we go across the field with anything, you can kill them. It's just worth noting that there's a lot of green clover worms out there.
Absolutely. It's one of them.
Year.
Why do you think that is? Any thoughts?
You know, I've been seeing them in our ditch bank surveys. Early April, when we were doing our red banded surveys, I was catching green clover worms. Were y'all catching them then?
Yeah, they like legumes in the spring, so maybe we had a bigger population build up during the spring.
Maybe so. I had a guy I used to work for that said there's an argument. He said I could make the argument that green clover worms are a beneficial insect. And I like looked at him. I'm like, what are you talking about? He said, well, think about it. That's the only lep we got really early in the season, and what it does is it blows up beneficial insects for the rest of the season. And I kind of see the argument. But the point is they're extremely easy to control, and there's more out there than we've seen in a while.
And treat them like another defoliator.
So we're sitting here on, I don't even know what the date is today. Sometime
29th.
I've had a couple calls out at Kruger Chula area of loopers already at threshold level. Ooh. And that's where they always seem to hit first in the state of Mississippi is for some reason is in that Kruger Chula area. And a lot of people looking at the calendar date, and we're not that early, but we're a little early. They're wondering, hey, I think I'm going to call them cabbage loopers. We're getting into August. Yeah, I would not consider anything a cabbage looper at this point, well, even if it is.
I mean,
you treat them like
if you got loop. A few, it doesn't really matter.
Right.
But if you got enough to deal with, I don't know if I'd roll a dice and call them cabbage loopers because just like Jeff said, if you're wrong, you got to come back.
Absolutely. I treat everything from this point forward as a soybean looper.
So what would you say if you had to put a timeline on considering cabbage looper versus considering everything soybean looper?
Well, the penalty for being wrong is big. Like if you go after them with a pyrethroid, I mean, it's big. I'd say about the
mid-July.
Mid-July. I'd probably say anything after mid-July I'd call soybean looper.
And it's unlikely you're going to have enough to deal with till you get into, say, now and further on. And it's more obvious that it would be soybean looper.
You know, I've actually heard that same thing this year about threshold soybean loopers. And, you know, the thing that's bad about it being this much earlier hitting that point this year is the question that I was asked was, what can I spray right now that might get me through? I'm at R2 to R3 on these beans.
Yeah.
Got threshold loopers. What do I spray?
Yeah.
To get me by. And, you know, thinking back, the diamides, Prevathon or Besiege, used to be really, really good on loopers, and they still are good on loopers. But where we've seen the diamides starting to fall off is the residual control. We're not getting a residual on loopers that we used to with the diamides. And so it's, you know, if you're at the R2 to R3, it's getting into that point where there's a good chance that nothing is going to get you through to the end of the year if we run into a big looper year.
Yeah. And if you got some right now, I wouldn't be terribly worried about it. And here's why I say this. I looked at the weather. They're talking about in the next 7 days, the low temperatures at night being in the upper 60s.
Yeah.
There could be a disease blow up like last year, and do they just disappear?
Really? Yeah. If you make a bollworm spray right now with Intrepid Edge or Besiege or Prevathon, targeted at bollworms, you're probably realistically good about minimum 2 weeks, though, wouldn't you say?
I would think
minimum.
So.
Yeah. For bollworms?
No. For the loopers is an indirect.
Yeah.
Is an indirect. Yeah. I mean, I'm guessing you're going to get at least 2 weeks free, but that don't get you to the end of the season, like you said.
Yeah.
It's just a little early for loopers.
And, you know, last August we had a building of a raging looper population, had a cold front come through, virus blew up in there, and they vanished.
That's right.
And you know, that's another thing I just thought about this is, you know, we've used a lot of straight Intrepid for loopers.
Yep.
And one of the – we've always used lower rates than some of our counterparts in other states and done really well with them. And, you know, the reason for that is that we generally sprayed loopers really late.
That's right.
With Intrepid. So if you do get into some – a situation where it's still early, real young beans, green – and you decide to use straight Intrepid to save some money, just remember you're going to have to get that rate up a lot higher than we typically use with Intrepid.
Yep, that's right.
Yeah, so, because a lot of times the window that Intrepid is fit is that R5, 8, 5, 9, 6, where you need it about 10 days,
mm-hmm.
not R5 and a half where you need it 3 weeks.
And I still think, too, and I've always said this, and it's just me thinking – that when we get into that stage and then beans start hardening off, they're probably not as nutritious, and the loopers just seem to die better than they do good green foliage. And that's why we've got away with those lower rates. But, you know, right now, you're right. I don't think I'd be skimping on anything if you're trying to kill a looper this early in the season.
Yep.
Let's move into stink bugs a little bit. What's y'all hearing on Red Banded? I mean, I've heard we've sprayed, you know, quite a few acres south, but we still hadn't seen other than the occasional ones up north. But as these earliest planted beans, you know, begin to – they're getting on up there in age. As they begin to mature and we take them out, things could change really quickly.
Right now, what I'm hearing is that area you talking about that sprayed some, they had a flush. I haven't heard anything else out of that area. Have you?
Yeah, there's been, I think, a couple sequential sprays, not like immediately.
But not just huge amounts.
No, not huge amounts, but there's more and more acres seem to be hitting threshold every day, but they're not backfilling yet big time, and that may not happen until we start taking more early planted beans out.
Yeah, we still have a lot of beans right now that are still attractive, so I think they're just scattered.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, and, you know, Central Delta up, I'm seeing, you know, just occasional stink bugs of, you know, whatever species.
Yeah.
The guys around Madison I talked to is kind of, you know, just scattered some. And I talked to a buddy of mine kind of in South Mississippi in the Meadville area and said it's just a few. So it's just pockets.
Yeah.
Yeah, we're starting to pick them up here.
Yeah. In your planting date study where you got your really early stuff, are they in your earliest planted at the moment? Or are they?
Yeah, they're in the first planted. So that April planting date, we're running about 4 per 100 sweeps.
Okay. So they're just kind of
just starting.
I mean, most outside of those areas that you mentioned, it's, we got some, but it's not really enough to deal with.
One thing that I've heard mentioned, I guess within the last week, that I hadn't heard previously is some folks starting to see some reproduction in beans, you know, where they're seeing these low one or two per 25 sweeps, and now they're starting to pick up a nymph here and there.
Yeah. Hey, let me take this. So I picked up, I was asking Don before we started, he sent a picture out the other day, and I thought I saw a couple of VBCs in it, which is a little more unusual for the Delta. But I picked them up 2 weeks ago in the hills, which I would call really early, and they can be a big problem in the hills of Mississippi. Because when they show up in really big numbers, and they can eat a lot of foliage quick, and they sneak up on people over there sometimes. But I want to mention, let's talk about Dimlin just a minute. And the reason I say that is because we've already talked about green clover worms. But I was asked recently about what my thoughts were on Dimlin and its fit. When I get asked about Dimlin, we have a long history of using a lot of Dimlin in the state of Mississippi. My first question is, why are you using it? And depending on their answer, depends on my answer back to them. If they say to me, well, I'm worried about green clover worms or VBC, which is typically the hills, I'm like, hey, go for it. It's a great product for VBC, and it's a great product for green clover worms. And there's no question about it. I think they use it as an automatic in Georgia, still used a lot in the hills of Mississippi, give you a dang near a month residual on those two. But when it comes to soybean loopers, this has been my issue, especially for the Delta. It does not control them. In fact, I used to spray Dimlin on my soybean plots to weed out the velvet beans and green clover worms to have pure populations of soybean loopers. So I'm not anti-Dimlin, and I think people's been hanging that on me, but I'm not at all anti-Dimlin. But tell me why you're using it, and if you're you have the right reason, hey, I'm all for it.
I ran a test a couple of years ago. I did a rate test on Dimlin on loopers. We could get 70% control with a quart.
Okay. We're spraying 2 ounces.
Yes.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, and that's my reason. Yeah, that's what I'm talking about.
It is not a top-tier looper product.
And if you're not concerned about loopers and you're concerned about velvet beans and green clover worms or whatever, by all means, it's a cheap product, and I think it's actually got a good fit for those. But you're going to leave your loopers and your boll worms. So, again, I'm not anti-Dimlin. I just want to make sure. A lot of people might think I am. I'm not at all. Just have a reason.
And it works really good if you got a bunch of immature grasshoppers.
Exactly. I've made that recommendation a couple times this year. Yeah, that's exactly right.
So I think at this point, what are your kind of your final thoughts on this topic?
Well, I think things are just starting to pick up.
Be vigilant.
We got a lot of little things starting to pop, and I think as we take these oldest beans out and we start condensing to the greener spots, things are going to change really quickly in the next couple of weeks or so.
Yeah, we've got a lot of R3 beans right now, a lot of R2 beans.
There's no substitute for a sweep net in a field right now.
That's exactly right.
So I think with that, be mindful of your scouting and know that things are starting to pick up, and hopefully we'll talk to you again soon. And if you have any questions, feel free to call us. Thank you.
The Mississippi Crop Situation Podcast is produced by the Mississippi State University Extension Service.